Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.
Before we begin today's episode, I want to make a disclaimer that there will be mentions of sexual violence. Listener discretion is advised. During this trial, you are going to learn the defendant was a savvy New York City businessman. He was a famous and powerful Hollywood producer who lived a lavish lifestyle. The evidence will also show that this man was a sexual predator and rapist. These are the words of Manhattan Assistant District Attorney Megan Hast in her opening statements on January 22, 2020. She continued on, quote, different women, different places, decades apart, same crime. At the end of this trial, the evidence will be clear that this man was not just a titan in Hollywood, but also a rapist. He stalked women when they didn't comply. He used power to ensure silence. You will learn during the course of this trial, these women internalized trauma, some even for decades. They will each describe fear, shame, and humiliation following violent encounters. Each of them struggled but managed to put on a brave face for the world. Each feeling small and insignificant, they were no match for this power broker in Hollywood. At the same time, he was seen for the cameras on red carpets and rubbing elbows with politicians. These women will have their voices heard. They come from different walks in life, and only one is still an actress. But what they have in common is strength and courage. These sexual assaults are not what you think about when you think of rape. Not back alley, unsuspecting person. Not date rape scenario. Here, the rapist was at the pinnacle of the precision that the victim strived to be. Power imbalance was professional and physical. When these women take the stand, keep in mind who the defendant was in the world of these women and the realities of how victims behave. Listen to these women with an open mind. Really listen. When you hear anyone in this courtroom talk about consent and what the defendant thought, remember the trick. Anyone who consents to being with another person does not have to be first tricked. Ultimately, this trial is about the defendant's desire to conquest, his complete lack of empathy that he must be held accountable. Attorney Damon Sharonis delivered opening statements on behalf of the defense. Good morning. This is Harvey Weinstein, right here. He's the person that prosecutor Megan Hast called a predator, trickster, rapist. This stops now in this courtroom. What we have just heard was a narrative to explain things that are inexplicable. The evidence about these women is not true. Everything that Hast just told you is not evidence. She wasn't there. She's relying on what the women told her happened. You will judge what is fact and fiction. The only test that matters is for credibility. You sit in judgment. Harvey Weinstein says I didn't do it, and I'm going to let 12 people decide. Your job is extremely important. Individuals raised their hands and said I can't be fair. God bless them. You all said I can be fair. I can listen to the evidence and drown out the noise in this case. Whatever I heard or read about doesn't matter. The only thing is what happens here. The judge told you the importance of that. If you drown out the noise, you are going to know that what Hast told you doesn't hold water, because it's not true. We have been waiting patiently to tell the story. It hasn't been easy for Harvey Weinstein to listen to that. If you listen to this state, there are themes that are common. The women were weak, couldn't stand up for themselves, were lured in by Harvey Weinstein, tricked. That's a mirage, and don't take my word for it. The 2020 version of Harvey Weinstein kind of fits. But this happened in 2006 and 2013. He was a successful producer. The truth doesn't change when an article comes out in 2017. He made all these movies at the Oscars. I'm going to ask you to think about if it's possible that any of these individuals were attracted to him. Evidence will show that he wasn't this master manipulator. The state's openings were a preview of a movie you aren't going to see. It's going to be emotional and it's going to be tough to see, but be patient. The state knows their story is problematic. You're going to hear about communications the accusers had with whom they're calling a predator. We are going to show you the truth. We are not victim shaming. Victim is a conclusion after a trial. These are complaining witnesses. Harvey Weinstein has a right to say not so fast. No one has questioned anybody yet. Some of these people have gone out and done interviews. No one has asked them questions. We will do it respectfully and ethically. As jurors, you are going to be shown two realities. Hear what the witnesses say. They're going to be asked to go back in time and hear what happened at that time. What you will see is shocking based on the opening statement you just heard from the state. Weinstein was not a predator to these women. Quite the contrary. The state knows they have a problem, and it's all this evidence. They have to create something. You are going to see after Weinstein allegedly sexually assaulted one of the women, she wanted him to meet her mother, that she gave him her new number after she lost her phone, and that she asked if he will be around for her birthday. At some point, you are going to say, "Oh my God, Harvey Weinstein is innocent." I'm sure you've heard Harvey Weinstein's name before. Local, national, and international media have reported on allegations against him for years now. But in this episode, I'm going to take you inside the courtroom, where cameras are not allowed. And thanks to the hard work of reporters and producers, bring you the firsthand account of the testimony against one of the biggest media executives and a driving force behind the Me Too movement. Then decide for yourself. Is Harvey Weinstein a master manipulator and an abusive rapist who treated women as complete disposables, as the state alleges? Or is he simply a sex addict who engaged in consensual encounters with numerous women, as his defense insists? In this episode, we are going to cover the state of New York versus Harvey Weinstein. This is Jillian, and you are listening to Court Junkie, episode 103, part 1. So, how did we get here? Harvey Weinstein surrendered himself to the New York Police Department on May 25th, 2018. He was carrying three books, including Todd Purdom's Something Wonderful, Rodgers and Hammerstein's Broadway Revolution. As he got out of a black SUV and walked past a swarm of TV cameras and reporters, police then escorted Weinstein, with a smile on his face and his hands cuffed behind his back, to the New York State Supreme Court building in Manhattan. Weinstein's attorney, Benjamin Braffman, who appeared in court alongside him, said they knew about the investigation for several months, and the charges were, quote, not factually supported by the evidence. The judge set Weinstein's bond at $10 million, with $1 million to be paid in cash. The judge also imposed a temporary protective order, barring Weinstein from being near the accusers, and ordered him to wear an electronic monitoring device. He could only be in New York or Connecticut, or must seek approval if he wished to travel elsewhere. He posted the cash and was released the same day. Weinstein was formally indicted less than a week later on charges of first-degree and third-degree rape and first-degree criminal sexual act for incidents involving two separate women. The top charges carry a penalty of 5 to 25 years in prison if convicted. Weinstein pleaded not guilty. The victim in the rape case had not been publicly identified until the start of this trial. Prosecutors say Weinstein raped aspiring actress Jessica Mann on March 18, 2013, inside a DoubleTree hotel at Lexington Avenue in Manhattan. The criminal sex act charge was from an alleged incident with Lucia Evans. Evans first came forward with her story in an interview with Ronan Farrow for The New Yorker magazine in an explosive article published in October 2017. Evans said Weinstein forced her to perform oral sex during what she thought would be a casting meeting at the Miramax office in Tribeca in 2004. Not long after the article published, NYPD detectives spoke to Evans to detail her allegations. A grand jury indicted Weinstein for a second time in July 2018 on charges he forced a third woman to have sex with him. One of these charges, predatory sexual assault, carries a maximum sentence of life in prison. Weinstein was also accused of forcing this woman to perform oral sex on him in July 2006. Mimi Halley went public in a press conference with her attorney, Gloria Allred, in October 2017. Halley worked as a production assistant for the Weinstein Company and says she agreed to meet Weinstein in his New York apartment in 2006 after having rebuffed several of his previous advances.
It was not long, though, before he was all over me making sexual advances. I told him no, 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 but he insisted.
Halley said she told Weinstein that she was on her period, but he wouldn't take no for an answer. He allegedly backed her into a room, held her down on a bed, ripped out her tampon, and performed oral sex on her. In October 2018, Judge Burke dismissed the Criminal Sex Act charge associated with Lucia Evans. Prosecutors admitted that one of Evans's friends told NYPD detective Nicholas DiGuadio, 3 months before Weinstein's indictment, that Evans told her that the encounter was actually consensual and that she agreed to perform oral sex on Weinstein in exchange for the promise of an acting job. According to a letter prosecutors filed with the court, the detective failed to inform the district attorney's office of important details of that interview. Weinstein's attorneys filed motions to dismiss the other charges as well. Those were denied. In August 2019, Harvey Weinstein was indicted for a third time. This indictment was not for new charges, but rather to allow a witness to testify under the legal theory that her story will support the charge of predatory sexual assault, even though her alleged encounter happened outside of the statute of limitations. Actress Annabella Sciorra, best known for her work in The Sopranos, said Weinstein sexually assaulted her in her Gramercy Park apartment in 1993. Judge Burke then set a trial date of January 6, 2020. Reports that Harvey Weinstein was involved in a car crash back in August 2019 surfaced towards the end of the year. According to a police report, Weinstein, quote, tried to avoid a deer in the roadway, at which point his Jeep left the road, striking a tree, causing the vehicle to overturn onto its side. He was seen months after the crash at a comedy club in New York City. When Weinstein arrived at his final pretrial hearing in December, many were surprised to see him walking across the courthouse using a walker. His attorney said later that day that he had back surgery and was in pain. On January 6, 2020, Weinstein, his team of attorneys, and the defense all gathered before Judge Burke. It was a judicial conference to determine scheduling of witnesses and to finalize the jury selection process. The defense filed a motion to have the jury sequestered during the trial. The judge denied that. The state requested that the judge impose a gag order on attorneys in the case, and the judge also denied that motion. Lead prosecutor Joan Aluzzi Orban accused the defense of making abominable statements to the media. Lead defense attorney Donna Rotuno told reporters after the hearing that she's never abominable.
As you heard, again, Ms. Aluzzi is attempting to silence us from speaking to you and speaking to the people of New York and country and the world, frankly. Here we are looking at a circumstance where she stands up in front of a court and calls my client a predator. Mr. Weinstein, again, has a right to a fair trial. I think she believes he's convicted already. That's not how this works. So we are here hoping to pick and find a fair jury, and we believe that that's going to be possible. And we're going to continue to press on and remind everyone that in this great country, you are innocent until proven guilty. And no evidence has yet been presented to a court or a jury, a trier of any fact. And that is why we are here to start this trial.
The state indicated that they would not be calling the lead detective, Detective DiGuardio, as a witness. Judge Burke said the defense can't proactively call Detective DiGuardio as their witness. He said the defense can cross-examine witnesses about the detective, and then if necessary after that, he could be called. Attorney Douglas Wigdor represented several of Weinstein's accusers, including model Terrell Wolf, who was testifying as another bad act witness, alleging that Weinstein raped her and masturbated in front of her inside of a Manhattan loft. Wigdor spoke about it at a press conference.
Let me just say this. The last time I stood in this before this courthouse, before a crowd such as you, was at the beginning of the dawn of a different decade. It was 2011. And in 2011, I had the privilege of representing Nafissatou Diallo, the maid who we allege had been sexually assaulted and raped by Dominique Strauss-Kahn. Unfortunately, that case ended with the district attorney dismissing the indictment. But today, we start a new decade, a decade that has come so far in the Me Too movement. And today, we are beginning the process of holding Harvey Weinstein accountable for his actions.
Then Gloria Allred spoke. She represented Mimi Halley and Annabella Sciorra, along with a third woman testifying as another bad act witness.
There have been many news reports about the allegation that Black Cube was hired by Mr. Weinstein's defense attorneys to investigate the certain witnesses or certain individuals who might be speaking publicly about what they allege was their truth about Mr. Weinstein. And it has come out that that is true, that there has been such an investigation. And so the prosecution indicated that if the defense does not stipulate to that, then they are going to want to call attorney David Boies to the witness stand in reference to Black Cube.
Black Cube is a private intelligence agency with ex-spies that Weinstein is alleged to have hired. Former Israeli Mossad agents working for Black Cube were hired by Weinstein to dig up dirt on people who might be going public with allegations against him. Activists, protesters, supporters, and the news media filled the steps of the courthouse prior to the start of trial. The Time's Up legal defense team organized for the accusers to speak. Actress Rose McGowan, known for her role in the TV series Charmed, among many other projects, accused Weinstein of raping her in 1997 at the Sundance Film Festival. She had recently appeared in the movie Scream, in which Weinstein was an executive producer. In 2017, the New York Times reported McGowan received a $100,000 settlement from Weinstein to not disclose her allegations in 1997.
Today, Lady Justice is staring down a super predator, you. You brought this upon yourself by hurting so many. You have only yourself to blame. You thought you could terrorize me and others into silence. You were wrong. We rose from your ashes. We rise together. That we've come to this moment of justice is staggering. The trial means so much to so many. But it will mean the most to the brave women testifying and to all of us silence breakers. I thank those testifying for standing, not just for themselves, but for all of us who will never have even one day in court. Know this, we are free, we are beautiful, we are strong, and you will never take that from us. Most importantly, know that the silence breakers will never give up. Survivors will never give up.
McGowan has since filed a civil lawsuit against Weinstein, Black Cube, and his former attorneys, Daniel Boies and Lisa Bloom. Lisa Bloom is the daughter of Gloria Allred and worked for Weinstein in 2016 and 2017. McGowan accused Weinstein, Black Cube, and his attorneys of trying to use covert and illegal tactics to discredit her and interfere with her plan to publish a memoir. They deny it. After court cleared out and involved parties went home for the day to prepare for the start of jury selection, another bombshell dropped, this time from the Los Angeles County District Attorney, Jackie Lacey.
I'm here today to announce that my office has charged Harvey Weinstein with sexually assaulting two women in Los Angeles County. We believe the evidence will show that the defendant used his power and influence to gain access to his victims and then committed violent crimes against them. In the complaint we filed earlier today, we allege that the first sexual assault took place on February 18th, 2013, in a Los Angeles hotel room. For those crimes, defendant Weinstein is charged with one felony count each of forcible rape, forcible oral copulation, and sexual penetration by use of force. He also faces one felony count of sexual battery by restraint of another woman. We allege the second assault took place the next evening in a hotel suite in Beverly Hills.
The next morning, jury selection in Weinstein's New York trial began. But before any potential jurors were brought in, a rather interesting moment in the courtroom. Lawn Crimes' Jesse Weber had been reporting from the trial and was inside the courtroom.
To set the scene a little bit, I was in the courtroom. I was in the front row right behind Harvey Weinstein. Now, the court rules do not permit cell phones, but I saw him actually using two cell phones before the judge entered. I thought it was a little strange. Well, I wasn't the only one who noticed. One of the court officers actually yelled at Harvey Weinstein and said, "Put it away." Now, the minute Judge Burke entered that courtroom, before he even put his robe on, he started yelling at the defense for Harvey Weinstein using his cell phone. Apparently, he is a repeat violator of this. This is when things turned chaotic. At one point, Harvey Weinstein even suggested and tried to explain himself away. The judge said, "Sir, I recommend that you invoke your right to counsel and remain silent." The judge said to Harvey Weinstein, "Don't answer this question, but do you want to spend the rest of your life in jail for using a cell phone?"
It was later revealed that Gloria Allred was the one who pointed out that Weinstein was using his phone. Defense attorney Damon Chironis made a motion to bar Gloria Allred from the courtroom, saying she might be called as a witness. Judge Burke denied that. The state requested Weinstein's bail be revoked due to the Los Angeles indictment, saying that he poses a danger to the community. The defense said there's no arrest warrant out for the LA charges and that nothing has really changed. Judge Burke agreed, and Weinstein's bail conditions remained the same. Judge Burke turned to the defense and said that if Weinstein violated any of his conditions, it's on them. Hundreds of people were summoned as potential jurors. In the first phase of jury selection, they were asked just two questions. Could they be a fair and impartial juror? And are they available to serve on the jury for the length of the trial, which could last up to 8 weeks? Potential jurors who answered yes to both questions were then instructed by Judge Burke to go home, fill out a jury questionnaire, and return to court with it later on. The jury questionnaire did not, however, ask for opinions about the Me Too movement. Then, the jurors were narrowed down into a smaller group. Questions on the questionnaire included things like if they know a crime victim and, quote, "The defendant, Harvey Weinstein, is a film producer. This case has been widely publicized over the last year, including extensive in-depth coverage of prior proceedings in this matter over the course of the last year. Can you assure all parties that you will determine this case based only on the evidence you will hear in court?" Supermodel Gigi Hadid was revealed to be one of the potential jurors. Judge Burke asked her if she knew Weinstein, Weinstein's lawyers, or witnesses against the defendant. She said she has met Weinstein before and has also met Selma Hayek. Hayek claimed that Weinstein sexually harassed her, too. Then Judge Burke asked Hadid, quote, "Is there anything about having met them that makes you unable to be an impartial juror?" Hadid said she thought that she's still able to keep an open mind on the facts. She reported back for jury selection, but was later dismissed. Another potential juror said that they too knew Weinstein. Mazdak Rassi told the court he actually knows Weinstein, his family, ex-wife, and children. Rassi is the husband of TV personality Zanna Roberts Rassi, who was featured on Project Runway All-Stars. Weinstein produced the show, and his ex-wife, Georgina Chapman, served as a judge for all seven seasons. Is it fair to say, then, that you know the defendant well enough that you couldn't be a fair and impartial juror? Judge Burke asked. I don't think I can, Rassi replied. Each side was given 20 peremptory challenges, meaning they could strike a potential juror without providing a reason for doing so. They have an unlimited amount of challenges for cause, however. Weinstein's defense used all of their peremptory challenges before juror number 11 was chosen. It was revealed in court this woman was writing a novel about predatory older men and their relationships with younger women. Jurors were excused from the courtroom, and Judge Burke denied the defense's request to grant them an additional peremptory challenge. Weinstein's attorneys then argued that juror number 11 should be stricken from the seated jury for cause because of her upcoming novel. Judge Burke immediately denied the defense challenge for cause without comment. Weinstein mouthed, "Wow," when she was allowed to be seated on the trial jury. Juror number 12 was chosen soon after, and the Weinstein jury had been selected. 12 members and 3 alternates. Of the 12, there were 7 men and 5 women. Although Harvey Weinstein is only charged with accusations from 2 women at this trial, the judge allowed 4 others to testify about allegations he assaulted them. In New York, these are known as Molyneux witnesses. Other places refer to them as prior bad acts. The judge allows these women to testify if their stories are strikingly similar to the accusations of the accusers from which he's being charged. The first of these women to testify was Annabella Sciorra. Annabella was raised in Brooklyn, New York. After graduating high school, she went to the American Academy of Dramatic Arts and worked towards being a professional actress. She made her feature film debut with a starring role in the 1989 comedy True Love. She was waiting tables to help pay her bills and secured another role in the 1990 film Internal Affairs. She was able to sign with an agent and had a role in Spike Lee's 1991 film, Jungle Fever. Around the same time, her agent took her to a party at a house in Los Angeles. It was there her agent introduced her to Harvey Weinstein. At the time, she didn't know who he was. She would soon come to learn that he owned the production and distribution company, Miramax. She accepted Weinstein's offer to give her a ride home from the party to where she was staying in Malibu. She said Weinstein told her to let him know if she came across any scripts that she was interested in. He gave her his card and soon after had more projects going on. The prosecutor showed the jury photos of Sciorra in the early 1990s and then photos of Harvey Weinstein from the early 1990s. Her friend Warren Wright wrote a script for a movie called The Night We Never Met. Sciorra said she thought it would be a good idea to show the script to Weinstein. She said at the time she wasn't planning on being in it. She said the roles were intended for Matthew Broderick and Sarah Jessica Parker. Weinstein arranged for a table reading with Sciorra. But after hearing Sciorra read the script, Sciorra said Weinstein said he wouldn't produce it unless she was in it. She said she told Weinstein that she had just finished filming 2 other movies and was tired and needed a break. Apparently, in an effort to help her relax, Sciorra said Weinstein sent her a care package with a note, "Enjoy these movies." In it were movies, Valium, licorice, wine, and popcorn. He later sent her another care package, this one with chocolate penises. She said before then she had never taken a sleep aid, but she took the Valium. Shiora still said no to being in the movie, and then Weinstein threatened to sue her. She said she sometimes saw Weinstein at dinners or movie screenings. She said she was very tired during this period and wasn't feeling well. In 1993, she was renting an apartment in Gramercy Park North. It was actually two apartments connected together. She recalled going to dinner at an Irish restaurant with about 8 or 9 people, including Uma Thurman and Harvey Weinstein. She said the dinner was overall uneventful, and she wanted to leave a little early. Weinstein offered to give her a ride back to her apartment. The restaurant wasn't far from her apartment, so it was a quick ride. In court, Shiora began to choke up as prosecutor Joan Aluzzi Orban asked her about this. Was there anything inappropriate about that? No, not at all, Shiora replied. Was the defendant driving the car? No, he had a driver. Do you remember anything about the conversation in the car? I don't remember. Was it in any way sexual? No, not at all. What happened when you arrived? I got out, said goodnight, and went into my apartment. Shiora described the building as having two entrances with a doorman. She said it was a kind of a fancy apartment that came with the key to the exclusive Gramercy Park. The following is based off notes from the courtroom and is not an official transcript. Do you remember what time he dropped you off? It was about 9:30 or 10 p.m. What happened? I went upstairs, got ready for bed. I washed my face, brushed my teeth, and put on my nightgown. What kind of nightgown? White cotton that had been from my mother's cousin from Italy, quite old. Then there was a knock on the door. I opened the door. Did you look through the peephole? I don't remember. You were in your nightclothes and opened the door anyway? Yes. Did anyone announce that someone was coming up? No. Did the doorman call you? No. What happened next? Shiora paused on the witness stand and began to get emotional as she recalled the next part of her story. The defendant was there and he pushed the door open. And he started to walk. There were two bedrooms and he started to walk around. I didn't know what he was doing. He was looking to see if someone else was there. He unbuttoned his shirt and that's when I realized that he thought we were going to have sex. There was an objection by the defense then, saying it was speculation. Judge Burke overruled. Shiora continued. I realized what he wanted. It was pretty obvious. I started to back up because I thought I could make it to my bathroom. I told him to leave. It wasn't going to happen. I was not going to have sex with him. I felt very overpowered because he's very big. Shiora said at the time she was only 110 pounds. I started to back up, thinking I could make it to my bathroom and get in there when he grabbed me. Shiora was asked to demonstrate. She indicated by the collar. She continued, he led me into the bedroom and shoved me on the bed. I can't tell you exactly when his pants came off or what exactly happened. I don't think my shirt came completely off. I didn't have underwear on underneath my nightgown. I was punching, kicking him, trying to get away from him. He put my hands over my head, holding my wrists down. She demonstrated for the jury by standing up and holding her wrists crossed above her head. She said, then he got on top of me and raped me. She was asked to provide more details. What did he do? He put his penis inside my vagina and he raped me. He had intercourse with me while I was trying to fight, but I couldn't fight because he had my hands locked. At a certain point, he stopped and he came out of me and ejaculated on top of my leg and my nightgown. Were any words exchanged? He said, I have perfect timing. Shiora was now crying on the witness stand, but she continued. He then proceeded to put his mouth on my vagina. Before he did that, he said, this is for you. I didn't have much fight left. I said, no, no, but there was not much I could do at that point. My body shut down. It was so disgusting that my body started to shake, which was very unusual. I didn't know what was happening. It was like a seizure or something. The defendant left and walked out. What happened to you? I don't remember. Not sure if I fainted or blacked out or fell asleep, but I woke up on the floor with my nightgown kind of up and didn't know if something else had happened. The prosecution asked Shiora if she was still taking Valium at that time. She said no, because she realized that she had become addicted, and so she had begun a homeopathic treatment to wean herself off. She said she hadn't taken any Valium on this night and didn't take any drug or substance prior to him coming to her apartment. After Weinstein left, Shiora said she wanted to pretend like it never happened and wanted to get back to her life. She never called the police. She said at the time she was confused. She thought Weinstein was a nice person and an okay guy. She didn't know why she opened the door for him. She wasn't expecting him there, and she didn't invite him up. She said she felt at the time that rape was something that happened in a back alleyway by somebody you didn't know, and she knew Weinstein. But according to Shiora, he physically forced her to have sex with him and physically forced oral copulation on her. Shiora continued, "I resumed my life to the best of my ability. How about when you were alone? I cried a lot. I had a lot of what is now known as dissociative experiences. I didn't see many people, and I didn't want to talk about what happened. I disappeared. I drank a lot and began to cut myself a lot." She began to choke up again. "I had this wall that was white, and I began to paint like a blood-red color with tubes of oil paint. I don't know what I was doing. I would cut myself and put the blood on this masterpiece." "Why did you do that?" "I don't know." "Had you ever done this before in your life?" "No." "Did you tell anyone in your family?" "Yes, I called two of my brothers, but I didn't tell them what happened." "Why?" "I didn't know how to tell them on the phone." She said she saw Weinstein next weeks later while at dinner at a restaurant. She said while there, she confronted him and tried to talk to him about what had happened. She told him how she woke up naked. His response was, "That's what all nice Catholic girls say." He then leaned into her and said, "This remains between you and I." She said he was very menacing. His eyes were black, and she thought he was going to hit her right there. She felt threatened and afraid of him. She said in 1994, she was filming the movie Innocent Sleep for producer Matthew Vaughn. She began receiving messages from the concierge nearly every day that Weinstein had called and she should call him back. She said she never did. She said Weinstein grew irritated and one night showed up at her door, banging incessantly. She said she didn't let him in. Producer Matthew Vaughn helped her move hotels in the middle of the night. She said her friend, Rosie Perez, an actress and former host of The View, called her during this time. In 1997, she agreed to play a role in the Miramax film Copland alongside Sylvester Stallone. She said while at the Cannes Film Festival in France, she opened her hotel door at 5 a.m. to see Weinstein standing in his underwear with a bottle of baby oil in one hand and a videotape in the other. She said she was very scared and went back into her room to call for help. She said Weinstein left after she called hotel staff up to the room. Since then, she has never been alone with him. She said in 2017, she was contacted by multiple people claiming to be reporters, but she believed that they were working for Weinstein. She said she had been contacted by another journalist and knew her story was going to come out. She assumed Weinstein wanted to know what information she had. Gloria Allred represented Annabella Shiora and spoke to the media after her testimony.
"It's not what she expected. It's not what she wanted. And she didn't consent to an act of sexual penetration of her by Mr. Weinstein's genitals. And she didn't consent to any act of oral copulation by him on her." That's her testimony. I'm summarizing it, not saying it exactly, but that's her testimony. And it's very strong, clear testimony. So I'm very proud of her.
Annabella Sciorra was cross-examined by Donna Rotunno, who first pointed out that she's an actress, implying that she could play a role and sell that to an audience. Rotunno also pointed out that Sciorra doesn't remember a lot of the details of the rape, and she got Sciorra to concede that at one point, Weinstein was, quote, friendly cajoling her into the bedroom, which she said she wasn't sure if she had told that to the DA. Rotunno continued, when you talked to the DA's office on January 14th, 2019, didn't you say he told you to take your nightgown off and you said no? Yes. Did he say that before or after he pinned your hands down? Before. Where were you in the apartment when he put his hands on you? Trying to get into the bathroom. When he put his hands on top of your shoulder area, did you try to take him off? It was very fast. I just remember fighting. Did you scratch him? I don't know. Try to poke him in the eyes? No. Scream? Yes. I was yelling at him to get off me and leave me alone. You claim at some point he held your hands above you on the bed. Was it with one hand or two hands? One hand. How long would you say the entire alleged encounter happened from the time he showed up to the time you say he leaves? I don't know. After he left, did you pick up the phone? No. Did you go downstairs? No, I passed out. When you woke up, did you go to the police? No. Go to the doctor? No. Hospital? No. What time did you wake up the next day? I really don't know. Later that evening. You don't know the specific date or time when it took place? You said you didn't report it because you didn't think it was rape? At the time, I didn't understand that it was rape. You were 33 years old, a famous actress? Yes. Weinstein and Miramax weren't the only filmmakers in town? No. Next, Rotunno asked her about her time filming in London and about telling Matthew Vaughn about Weinstein contacting her. Sciorra said she didn't save any of the messages from Weinstein. The person who you claim raped you, but you don't save any of those messages? No. Sciorra said she talked with Matthew Vaughn about possibly going to the police, but never mentioned to Weinstein that she wanted to go to the police. When you say you saw Harvey Weinstein at the next Miramax event, you didn't say to Harvey, "You raped me?" I said what you did was wrong. You stated that you told Harvey Weinstein you woke up on the floor, but remember everything that happened? Yes. Except the date? Yes. Rotunno then asked her about her role in Copland that she took afterwards. Sciorra said it was a small budget film, even though it starred Sylvester Stallone. She was asked if any of the scripts ever said Miramax on them, and she said no. When asked if she ever said she didn't want to be in it because of Harvey Weinstein, she said no. She told the court that she was threatened with a lawsuit if she didn't show up every day and work on the set. In order to threaten a lawsuit, you must have a contract. At what point were you threatened? We were negotiating. I was asked to go to New York and continue to negotiate in good faith. Price never came up. The role never changed. I just didn't want to do it. She said at some point she signed a contract, but after she was threatened. How long did shooting take? I don't know. Harvey Weinstein was on the set? I don't know. I didn't see him. Rotunno ended her cross by playing a video clip of Sciorra appearing on the David Letterman show for the first time on August 6, 1997. Letterman asks her about appearing in different media events and if she ever invents different answers when she does. Sciorra replies in part, I have a bad reputation and I was caught recently in the last couple of years lying about quite a few things. She then says, I didn't really feel comfortable, and I really don't think it was anybody's business. And so I would really not just, you know, fib, but I would make up quite elaborate stories. She says she made up a story about Dennis Hopper and her father raising iguanas for the circus. In another example, she says the person interviewing her didn't ask any questions about it, So it's now in part of her biography that she was roommates with Justine Bateman in Paris. Letterman then asks Shiora, "So how do I know you're not lying about all this here tonight?" Shiora replies, "You don't." The crowd claps. The prosecutor immediately followed up on redirect. "This interview on a comedy show, were you talking about lying about matters as serious as what we're here for?" "Absolutely not." "Were you indicating about shielding your personal life to spin a tale after being asked personal questions over and over again?" "Yes." She then said she told her friend Rosie Perez about the incident with Weinstein. Rotuno asked Shiora more about her conversation with Perez on Recross. "You say today that you told Rosie Perez, but you have no idea when that conversation took place?" "Weeks or months after." "You say today that you told Rosie Perez, but you have no idea when that conversation took place?" "Weeks or months after." "Did Rosie Perez call you on a regular basis to see how you were doing?" "No." "So you told her and that was it?" "You forgot you told her because she never brought it up, right?" "I was in trauma." Public defender Brian Buckmeyer explained on the Law and Crime Network how the David Letterman clip was allowed into evidence.
"In a case like this, it's all about credibility, and they're going to attack every witness's credibility, and you have to some extent, to get to the truth."
Annabella Shiora was on the stand for more than 6 hours. Actress Louise Godbold also accused Weinstein of sexually assaulting her. She's now the director of Echo Training Organization, which provides survivor-led trauma and resilience training to victims. She was in the courtroom listening to Shiora's testimony.
"Very upsetting, hearing the details of the rape. I think Annabella is incredibly courageous. I know that it took a lot out of her, just even thinking about testifying. And you would not have known. On the stand, she was so composed, poised, almost regal. And it's also fairly common that people do not report. So I don't think she should be judged for that. I mean, she was behaving like very many survivors too. I mean, I told the person who was waiting for me, because obviously I came out of Harvey's hotel suite totally discombobulated, and he knew something was wrong. But I didn't tell very many other people in my life, especially my family, especially my mother. I wouldn't want to upset her. I wanted to put it all behind me, and I'm sure that Annabella felt the same way.
Over objections from Weinstein's lawyers, Judge Burke allowed Rosie Perez to take the stand. She said she met Annabella Shiora in the early 1990s, and they hit it off right away. Since then, they've remained good friends. She said she also knows Harvey Weinstein and first met him at the Venice Film Festival, also in the 1990s. She said she believes she spoke to Annabelle Shiora on the night she was allegedly assaulted. She remembers it being a chilly night in 1993. Perez said she called Shiora asking if she wanted to go out to a nightclub to have some fun. But she said when Shiora answered the phone, she was talking in a strange whisper. She said Shiora was whispering like she was hiding from someone. Quote, "I said, 'What's wrong with you?' She said, 'I think something bad happened.'" Perez asked what happened, and Shiora replied, "I think I was raped." Perez said Shiora's voice was shaking over the phone, and she asked her, "You think, or did it happen?" Shiora started crying, and Perez said she asked her who did this. But Shiora said, "I can't. I can't. I woke up on the floor. My nightie was up. It's a family heirloom. I gotta go." Shiora then hung up. Perez tried calling her back, but she wouldn't pick up the phone. A few months later, Shiora called Perez from London. That's when Perez said that Shiora, quote, "told me that it was in fact Harvey Weinstein who raped her. She told me he showed up at her door. She was confused. Why was he standing there? He pushed his way through the door. She was crying, telling me, 'I tried to fight back. I tried.'" Perez said Shiora continued to tell her that Weinstein ejaculated on her leg and on her nightgown. I said, oh, the family heirloom? She said yes, and she swore me not to tell anybody. I told her she should go to the police. She said, I can't. He'll destroy my career. On cross, defense attorney Damon Sharonis asked Perez why, if she thought her friend had just been raped, why she didn't go over to her apartment or call the police. Being respectful, you have a friend who may have been attacked that night and you didn't go over there? I was in shock, yes. In shock? I was scared of her. I kept calling and calling. You know, a friend tells you something like that and you don't know what to do. She was my very, very good friend. Did you go out that night? I didn't go. Was your plan to pick up Annabella? Yes. And you didn't drive over there? No. Another one of Annabella Sciorra's longtime friends, Kara Young, testified as to what she knew about the alleged assault. Young is a model, actress, and even dated Donald Trump 2 years before he married Melania. Young said she was concerned after seeing signs of slashes on Sciorra's legs in March of 1994. She said she noticed when the two were watching the Academy Awards with Sciorra's then-boyfriend, actor Gary Oldman, and another friend. She was different, Young said. She was fidgety and nervous, and she seemed like a mess. Young described seeing long, skinny cuts around Sciorra's upper leg area. She said Sciorra admitted to her that she was deliberately cutting herself. Defense attorney Arthur Adala asked Young if she knew about Sciorra's financial troubles or substance abuse issues at the time. The state objected to this line of questioning, and Judge Burke sustained. At one point, the judge raised his voice to tell Adala to sit down and to end his questioning. The state called forensic psychiatrist Barbara Ziv to the stand to talk about her expertise in the field of sexual assault and how rape trauma syndrome affects victims. She's testified in more than 200 civil and criminal cases, including Bill Cosby's. Her testimony is based on general knowledge, so she's considered a blind expert. Ziv said victims almost always go back to their attackers, which she described as the norm. She said it's a myth that victims run away from or distance themselves socially from their attackers. She testified that about 85% of reported sex crimes are between perpetrators and victims who know one another. She said it's also normal for victims to wait years before coming forward. The senior managing director of Guidepost Solutions, Sam Anson, was called to talk about when Harvey Weinstein spoke to him in August 2017 about investigating people who were on Weinstein's red flag list. Anson said Weinstein was concerned that people on the list were providing information to journalists who were writing stories about him. Quote, he was concerned the articles being written about him would discuss his sexual conduct in a negative way. He said Weinstein also raised the possibility that he was being extorted in that respect. According to Anson, Annabella Sciorra's name was on the list, and Weinstein, quote, mentioned a woman by the name of Rose McGowan. But Anson said he didn't actually carry out the investigation. I want to take a moment to explain the charges against Harvey Weinstein. He was on trial for 5 charges. Count 1, predatory sexual assault against Mimi Halle. Count 2, criminal sexual assault in the first degree against Mimi Halle. Count 3, predatory sexual assault against Jessica Mann. Count 4, rape in the first degree against Jessica Mann. And count 5, rape in the third degree against Jessica Mann. Counts 1 and 3, predatory sexual assault, are the most serious and carry a possible life in prison sentence. But in order for the state to have proven those charges, the jury must find that he assaulted Annabella Sciorra. In part 2, you'll hear the testimony from those women Weinstein is criminally charged with assaulting, and Weinstein's defense. And that's all for this episode. Stay tuned for part two, which I'll be releasing next week. This Harvey Weinstein series was written by Jennifer Tintner from the Law and Crime Trial Network. Follow her on Twitter at Jennifer Tintner. In the meantime, please follow me on Instagram at Court Junkie and on Twitter at Court Junkie Pod. And if you want to hear these episodes without the ads, go to courtjunkie.com/support, which will lead you to my Patreon page. Thanks again for listening. Until next time.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.